Okay. Good morning. This is the regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission for Thursday, November 14th. Can we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Here.
Commissioner Harrison?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Commissioner Brown?
Here.
Chairman Moultari?
Here. It's traditional we start our meetings with a flag salute. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Our first item on the agenda is the public comment period. This is the opportunity for people to address us for items related to our duties that are not on the agenda. Is there anybody here who'd like to talk to us about an item not on the agenda? Okay. Then we're done with that, and we go to planning staff updates. Alexandria?
Good morning, Chair Moultari and Commissioners. Alexandria Fowler, Planning Manager. I'll be providing you with a brief overview of your upcoming schedule. For your December 12th meeting, the following items are scheduled: a mining designation amendment to clarify the distinction between EX and EX1 and to introduce a new designation, a conditional use permit to expand an office facility for a church in Napomo off of Thompson Avenue, and an amendment to a track map for the expansion of a building envelope in Napomo, office Cimarron Lane. Your December 26th meeting has been canceled. And right now it looks like for your first January meeting on the 9th, it will be all wireless facilities on that agenda. For appeals of Planning Commission action to the board for consideration, next week, on the 19th, there will be the Lippi and AT&T conditional use permit for a wireless facility in Santa Margarita. Your commission approved that item in June of this year. The Diablo Canyon Power Plant North Ranch Road Improvement Project, which you approved on September 26th, there has been an appeal submitted for that, and that is tentatively scheduled for board consideration on December 10th. The Helio Day Springs North River Road conditional use permit for indoor and outdoor cultivation, which was reviewed by your commission on September 26th, has an appeal but has not been scheduled for board consideration yet. The Cabrillo Court track map and conditional use permit for a 14-lot subdivision, which was reviewed at your last meeting on the 24th of October, has an appeal but has not been scheduled for consideration by the board yet. And then the Mancini-Shetler conditional use permit for a indoor cultivation project, which was reviewed by your commission at your last meeting on October 24th. There was an appeal by the applicant for that one, and it has not been scheduled for board consideration yet either. And then one other item of interest to your commission may be that the Froom Ranch Specific Plan, EIR, is now available for public review. So that is a site that the City of San Luis Obispo is considering annexation of, but it is currently within the county's jurisdiction. It is 116 acres located at the kind of southwest corner of LOVR and Calle Joaquin. It has residential mixed use and a assisted living senior care facility component to it. And so that has public review of the draft EIR until December 23rd. So I will keep you posted on that one if your commission is interested in having more updates.
Okay, and last item, Sandria, that won't be coming to us. That goes to the city as annexation.
Correct, and then it will go through LAFCO for the annexation process.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah. The first item that you mentioned, can you go back to that?
What's the mining designations?
Yeah. The land designation? What was
mining designations.
Oh, mining designations.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's an update of how we define the EX and EX1, and then consideration of a third designation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
You might want to talk about the supervisor's decision on water transfers, if you got into that. My understanding is they denied. We approved it, but they denied the water transfer credit program. Am I right, staff?
I might have to punt that one over to Public Works or County Council.
Ben Dorth, County Council. I believe that they adopted all of your recommendations except for...
Yeah.
Well, actually, I believe they adopted all of your recommendations. We can maybe follow up with you at break.
The water credit did not go.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to suggest, Xandria, that you include in your reports to us these appeals or items that went to the board, what the board did, so that we can kind of learn their preferences and direction. And one other thing, too, is that in addition to the current planning stuff that's upcoming, if there are larger items that traditionally we would call advanced planning or long-range planning that you know are coming down the pike, maybe you could just give us heads-ups about that. For example, the farm worker housing stuff that we're going to do later today, it might have been good to know that this was being worked on, you know, over the last many months or year. And, again, this is not a criticism. This is just more information for us so that we can do our jobs a little better.
No,
and so there's, like, the Los Osos
community plan and Habitat Conservation Plan.
And the EIR for that, I think, is the comment period is over now or just about?
No, the comment period is still ongoing, and okay. I provided your commission with an update about that at your October meeting,
right.
But we can continue to do so.
Yeah, just short things. Let us know and where documentation might be, you know, to help us find that stuff and be prepared better for our meetings.
What I can also do is at your December meeting, I can provide your commission with the priorities that the board approved for community for planning and building at their last meeting. It outlines all of those long-range advanced planning projects that staff will be working on.
I think that'd be good for us to know what's coming down the pike, unless there's some disagreement. Is that all right? Okay. Thanks, Xander.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Okay. That brings us to the consent agenda. I think Ms. Nall has a comment before we act on this.
Good morning. Katie Nall, planning staff. I'm the project manager for the time extension EXT 2019-00073, and I just had a quick clarification. Although it's not mentioned in the first sentence of the subject within the staff report, the recommendation, the recommended action and the rest of the staff report acknowledge that this is a request for a first time extension. The agenda also acknowledges that this is a time extension. That is all. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification. Anybody have any questions or want to pull any items from the consent calendar? Seeing none, does anybody have a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, thank you. That brings us to our hearing items. And our first one, we understand there's a request for continuance, but let's introduce it, hear from the staff, and then we'll take it from there. Ramona?
Hearing number 6 is a continued hearing from October 10th and 24th to consider a request by CB Farms for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2017-00123, Supervisorial District Number 5, Project Manager Ian Landreth.
Thank you. Can we have a staff report, Ian?
All right. Good morning, Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Ian Landreth, and I'm with the Planning and Building Department, and I will be presenting the request by City Boy Farms for the conditional use permit DRC 2017-00123. One thing to note is this item was on the Commission's October 24th hearing agenda, and that is where the Commission voted to continue the public hearing to today's meeting. The proposed project is for a cannabis business, which includes 130,000 square feet of outdoor cannabis cultivation, 139,230 square feet of outdoor cannabis nursery, 22,000 square feet of indoor cannabis cultivation, and 7,010 square feet of indoor cannabis nursery located within a proposed 37,350 square foot greenhouse, 1,900 square foot of non-volatile cannabis manufacturing, and 600 square feet of non-storefront retail within a proposed 8,000 square foot metal building on an approximately 25-acre parcel. One thing to note is that a conditional use permit is required because more than one cannabis-related business is proposed, which constitutes as vertical integration per the cannabis ordinance. The project site is located at 4225 South El Pomar Road, which is approximately 4 miles northeast of the community of Atascadero. The project is located on an agricultural zoned property. The surrounding land uses include agriculture and residential rural. The next slide provides a closer view of the project site, which is highlighted in red. Surrounding ag uses include row crops and orchards. There are also some single-family residences. And the eastern adjacent parcel currently has a land use permit in process for indoor and outdoor cannabis cultivation. So the staff report for this project provides some greater detail on the enforcement history associated with the grading which occurred at the project site. And the purpose of this slide is to provide a general timeline of the events. So simply in February 2018, we had the City of Bowie Farms land use permit submitted for cannabis activities. In March 9th, county staff conducted an initial site inspection as part of that submission, and no grading activities were observed. In June 2018, code enforcement received a complaint alleging extensive grading activities had occurred at the site. Prior to their site inspection, code enforcement identified that an agricultural grading form was submitted in November 2017 to exempt grading to establish new fields, pastures for crop production and grazing, small reservoir, and seasonal irrigation in accordance with Land Use Ordinance Section 225270.C. That is our ag grading section. On June 14th, 2018, code enforcement visited the property and observed significant grading activities occurring in the form of terraces at the site. A stop work order was issued based on a determination that the grading constituted prohibited pre-development. After the applicant provided evidence in March 2019, which supported the grading being used for crop production purposes, the stop work order was lifted on April 1st, 2019, and the enforcement case was shortly closed thereafter on April 19th, 2019. Here's a site plan showing the arrangement of the proposed cannabis uses on the site. Cultivation of mature cannabis would occur in the eastern portion of the site and within the proposed greenhouse. Cultivation of immature cannabis plants would occur around the small knoll located near the center of the site and in the proposed greenhouse. Cannabis manufacturing and dispensary activities would occur in the proposed metal building. Processing activities would occur within two 320 square foot C-train containers and would also occupy a 1400 square foot portion of the proposed metal building during harvest. South El Pomar is located to the north, which is the right side of the screen.
Ian, not to cut you off.
Oh, anything, no problem.
But since this is your recommendation is to continue this off calendar to sometime in the distant future, we're going to have to review all this stuff again at that time. So maybe we could cut to the chase.
Let's cut to the chase. Yeah. I agree.
Makes sense.
So for us, we will skip to the end. And basically here, as you've mentioned at the start of this hearing, or at the start of this item, staff's recommendation would be to continue the item off calendar to allow us to have adequate time to respond to these comments received on the mitigated negative declaration. But that's not to say that we wouldn't accept public comment on this project today, just so that we capture all of the issue areas. And then, of course, 30 days prior to the hearing, public notice would be sent prior to any of those future hearing dates.
Okay, so which is almost certain that we continue it at least a month beforehand, people will be noticed.
That's correct.
Very good. If someone who's not within 1,000 feet gives you their address, will they be added to the list for notification?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. All right, any questions for staff?
Yeah, so it's actually staff that's recommending the continuation, is that right?
That's okay. Right.
With the concurrence of the applicant.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All right. I would suggest that anybody here who has something to add for staff to consider that's different from what is in the voluminous correspondence that we and they have received, you can tell us about that today. But if really you're here to argue for or against the project, We'd recommend that you wait until the substantive hearing, in which we'll make a decision in the future. But we will open it up for public comment. If anybody wants to speak, it would be great if you would fill out one of these speaker forms and put your name and address there. So does the applicant have anything to say at this point? Yes. Could you give us your name and address or location?
Roy Ogden. I'm counsel for the applicant, and we're accepting of the continuance. Appreciate you considering the project today. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. So is there anybody who'd like to talk to us today about this item, recognizing that it'll be sometime in the probably distant future before it returns to us? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission for comments and motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to accept staff's recommendation to continue off calendar this item.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. It is continued off calendar, and I'm sure you'll keep us informed about your progress. Thanks very much. Okay, our second hearing item is the Atascadero Mutual Water Company's request for CUP. Could you introduce that, please, Ramona?
Item 7 is a hearing to consider a request by Atascadero Mutual Water Company for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2019-00144. Supervisorial District Number 5, Project Manager Katie Knoll.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman and members of the Commission. Katie Knoll, planning staff. I'll be presenting the proposal for the conditional use permit DRC 2019-00144. The applicant, the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, is proposing to install a new 400-square-foot booster station enclosure with an asphalt concrete driveway as well as grading for a settling pond. The project will disturb approximately 6,650 square feet of the 20,038-square-foot parcel. It'll include 410 cubic yards of cut and 230 cubic yards of fill. The applicant provides water services to the subject parcel's area, which currently is served by two wells. Installation of a booster station will improve the water system's reliability and will be significantly more energy efficient than the existing wells. The booster station will be used to transport clean water to residences in the area, and the settling pond will be used for maintenance operations for the water distribution system. Such maintenance includes flushing of the water mains or testing of the pumps, which on average take place every other year. The pond will allow discharge to percolate and evaporate and help the applicant comply with national requirements for water distribution systems. The project is located about half a mile south of the city of Atascadero, between El Camino Real and Viejo Camino. It is located within the residential suburban land use category. This is an aerial view of the site. You can see that it's currently vacant. And this is the grading plan for the project. It shows the layout of the settling pond and the orientation of the enclosure. The driveway will connect off of Viejo Camino. Here is a cross section showing the length of the pad and the driveway, as well as the elevation of that section of the parcel. Note that the horizontal distance is larger than the vertical. This is another cross section, which includes the pond and the concrete pad. On October 4th, 2019, county staff visited the site and no environmental concerns were identified. This is a photograph of the site looking west from Viejo Camino. And this is a photograph of the view looking south from Viejo Camino. The site is slightly sloped towards Viejo Camino. Staff recommends approval of conditional use permit DRC 2019-00144 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. I'm available for any questions.
Are there any questions for staff at this point? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to open the public hearing. The way this works is the applicant gets 10 minutes and other people get three. Is the applicant here and would like to address this? Good morning.
Good morning. John Neal, General Manager of the Atascadero Mutual Water Company. I think your staff did an excellent job really boiling down the essence of the project, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have about it.
Okay. Are there any questions? I guess there's none, so thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak on this item today? Yes, sir. And did you fill out one of those forms?
I didn't.
Afterwards, if you would. Just tell us your name.
Good morning. My name is Ryan McKinley. I live directly across the street from this proposed lift station. I just have a few concerns about the lift station going in and wanted to address those. The first is water drainage. Currently, my house sits on a little bubble. I have drainage that runs down each side of my house, and also the culvert from across the street goes into my property. Every year I get floods. There's really... the topography and the drainage for all of my neighbors is just not substantial. The water, the street floods every time it rains, and I'm really concerned with this new development and the hardscape and that sort of stuff, that the water is just going to be worse intrusion on my property. My neighbor to the left of me drains his property onto my property. Neighbor to the right, I get drainage. Everything off of El Camino and the property that this proposed pump station on drains into my property. And I just would really hope that everybody takes the time to really look at that, because my neighbors and I have spent thousands of dollars already putting in additional drainage piping and that sort of thing. And I'm just here today to make sure that we have due diligence in designing the water runoff and everything, because it could be very problematic for myself and my neighbors if everything is going to continue just to dump right on my property.
Thank you for your time this morning.
I have a question. Yes. I noticed in the plans there was a settling pond. Would that be of any benefit to
you? I mean, I'm not sure how the settling pond works and if it's just for the water that's, you know, generated and pumped in the station, or if it's going to collect all of the water coming off El Camino. If that is the case, then I certainly am okay with that proposed situation. I'm just it's just a problem every rainy season for me, and as long as everybody takes that into account, I would really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We have another comment.
I'd like to hear the applicant's comments relative to that gentleman.
We're aware of the drainage issues out there. The settling pond, I'm a registered civil engineer, so I'm familiar with site design. The settling pond will offset the drainage that currently exits that property. Water that's incident to that area is going to basically sit there and percolate into the ground. So it'll more than offset the impacts of our development. It's not going to solve all the issues out there. There's still going to be water from off-site areas running onto this gentleman's property. That it's just the historic situation. I think our project will improve it. It probably won't improve it significantly, but it certainly won't exacerbate it.
I have another question, if I may, please,
of course.
Chairman. I don't see anything in the write-up about a safety fence around the pond, assuming it'll have water in it and potential risk there. How is that to be covered?
It will have water in it. Our intent is to keep it at 2 feet or less. Our flushing operations generally don't generate tremendous amounts of water. Our biggest problem with water system maintenance in that area is its rural character. We don't have formal drainage systems to discharge water from higher hydrants and that kind of thing. This will allow us to do unidirectional flushing from the Random Oaks tank back to this area. To basically clean the sediments that build up over time in the water mains.
So you don't think it would be a danger to the public to have that open water 2 feet deep?
I like I said, it'll happen just occasionally. It'll just primarily during our flushing operations. I don't anticipate that the rainfall will build up any water of any depth in there.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Thank you. Staff, are you have any responses to the issues of drainage and safety?
If I may, Chair,
yes,
David Graham with Public Works. So regarding perimeter fencing, if the pond is deeper than 2 feet, then our public improvement standards do require fencing. So the intention may be to keep it at 2 feet or less. We will review that at the time of building permit submittal, where we will also require them to submit a complete drainage plan, erosion control plan as well. where we can look at more of the holistic issues in the area. And then obviously they would not be able to discharge any additional water off their property unless they can show that there is capacity downstream. And that's all I have. Any other questions? I'm happy to answer.
Any other questions? I think that answered it pretty well. Thank you, David. Okay. So any other questions for staff? Is there a motion?
Yes. I would like to approve conditional use permit DRC 2019-00144 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B.
I'll second that motion.
And we have a motion and a second. Any comments or questions on the motion? Okay, there's not. Can we have a roll call, please, Ramona?
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Chairman Moltari?
Yes. Okay, this brings us to our last hearing item. Let staff get settled for a second here. Okay, Ramona, could you introduce this item, please?
Hearing item number 8 is a hearing to consider a request by the County of San Luis Obispo to approve amendments to the land use ordinance. County file number LRP 2017-00002, project manager Brian Pedrotti.
Thank you. Brian, can we have a staff report?
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Moltari and Planning Commissioners. Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. The item before you today is the Agricultural Worker Housing Ordinance Amendments. And just a presentation outline, we'll go through a number of items, including the summary and background of the State Employee Housing Act, the ordinance framework, and then public outreach. And then we'll go through the ordinance, do a comparison of the existing versus the proposed, and then go into some special considerations regarding H-2A visa, small water systems and land uses and cannabis and things like that. So the Agricultural Worker Housing Ordinance is intended to incentivize and remove barriers to agricultural worker housing. The definition of ag worker housing is in the staff report and generally defined as residential dwellings, including mobile homes or group quarters, such as dormitories or bunkhouses, occupied by employees of agricultural or ranching operations and the spouses and children of those employees. So the county has an existing ordinance. Currently it's entitled Farm Support Quarters that does allow these types of dwellings both in inland and coastal areas. And the ordinance we have generally allow for, they limit them based on the size of the parcel, the land use, and there's a density table in the ordinance that talks about the maximum density of units that you can have based on the ag use on the property. So, and just a little bit of background about how we came to today. Generally, farm workers are essential to SLO County's ag industry, the engine that drives jobs that support farms with equipment and industries that process, transport, and distribute food. There have been identified severe labor shortages. This came up in a couple of board hearings back in 2016-2017. And so it's been identified as a huge issue. Farm workers, according to the California Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD, farmers tend to have high rates of poverty, live disproportionately in housing in the poorest condition, have extremely high rates of overcrowding, and have low home ownership rates. And the HCD classifies farm workers as special needs in regards to housing. And this gives local jurisdictions the guidance to develop programs to meet the needs of local farm workers. And so we have the State Employee Housing Act, which is intended to balance the need between having safe, high-quality, affordable ag worker housing and then the concerns of local communities. So certain ag worker housing is deemed the same as an agricultural land use according to the Employee Housing Act and for the purposes of processing permits for those types of uses. It prohibits requiring use permits, variants, or other land use permits when it meets those criteria. And then the proposed ordinance that we have today, I just want to highlight that reflects the Employee Housing Act, which would allow up to 12 single-family ag worker housing dwellings, or up to 36 beds in a group quarter with a ministerial permit. And we'll go into that a little more when we get to the ordinance comparison. So an ordinance framework was constructed from staff research, input from our stakeholder group, and public comment. And then on August 21st of 2018, the Board of Supervisors supported the framework. And so the items that were in the original framework, including reducing the minimum lot size, expanding the distance to agriculture for calculating density. Currently it's 5 miles. We'll go in that a little bit later as well. Expand land use categories where allowed and appropriate. Combine the single family ag worker dwellings and group quarters into a new section. And then increase the number of ag worker dwellings allowed without a discretionary land use permit. So that was the original ordinance framework. And some things changed based on public input and all that as well, so we'll go into that a little bit. There's been a significant amount of community involvement and input throughout the process. This was deemed a top priority by the Board of Supervisors, and the county project management team met with an ag worker housing stakeholder group, which included industry groups, labor contractors, and other ag-related groups like the SLO Farm Bureau and Paso Wine Alliance. We met a couple times in early to mid-2018. There's also been community organizations involved. Staff met with, for instance, the California Women of Agriculture, the ALAB, which is the Agricultural Liaison Advisory Board, SLO Farm Bureau, and the Ag Preserve Review Committee. There was also a public workshop in October of 2018 where we invited the public to come and look at the public review draft. We also have an email notification list where we send out email blasts for anybody who's expressed interest in the project. So after all of that, we had a public review draft that was edited based on all of the comments received, and so the public hearing draft is what you have in your packet. And some of the main topics and differences between the ordinance that we have today on farm support quarters and then the new one, the allowed land use categories did not change. They're still allowed only in the agricultural and rural lands land use categories. And there is the ability to do a caretaker unit in some other land use categories, and we'll talk about that in a second as well. One big change was that the minimum site area for group quarters was reduced from 20 acres to 5 acres. And then the maximum distance, as I mentioned earlier, for group quarters to the supported ag operation went from 5 miles to not having a distance. In terms of ministerial review for single-family units, currently you're only allowed to do 4 before a land use permit kicks in. That goes to 12. Same with for group quarters, 20 beds up to 36 beds. And again, this is based on the Employee Housing Act. And then the status of residence was also updated. It said the language was that ag workers have supported ag operation, including spouse and children, and based on input from, in particular, our stakeholder group, that was changed to include any agricultural worker, including their spouse and children. Just some special considerations. One big item with all of this is H-2A visa employment. And so H-2A visas are temporary work visas for foreign ag workers. And the trend has been that there's been six, at least up until when we were doing our research, there were six consecutive years of increasing H-2A visas. This is administered by the U.S. Department of Labor. And these visas require a more extensive hiring and recruitment burden. And there's, for instance, there's housing and meals must be provided by the employer. And from 2011 to 2016, in California, the number increased from approximately 1,500 to 11,000. And so the trend has been a very sharp increase. H-2A visa housing is also more likely to be group quarters, and based on these trends, then we would assume in the future we would have potentially more requests for group quarters. One thing to mention, in the incentivization and trying to allow the ordinance to allow these types of dwellings, public water systems are regulated by the State Water Resources Control Board, and they are required when a population of the project equals or exceeds 25 persons, and that's actually per water system. And so if you do get kicked into a public water system, it's going to be more time-consuming. There are additional operating costs. And, again, it gets more costly. And so this is a barrier that still remains. The ordinance won't address this. This is all through environmental health and the state regulations. Staff will continue to track this legislation, though, for future opportunities. And then another note regarding cannabis. Being a new, fairly new industry, the old ordinance didn't address it at all, and so we've included a footnote that cannabis operations are considered nurseries for calculating dwellings, and so the existing density that's allowed for nurseries is 1 unit per acre of propagating greenhouse or 3 acres of field-grown plant material. And so cannabis will only qualify for ag worker housing when it's in a nursery. There's no ag worker housing for indoor or outdoor cannabis cultivation. And just a note on land use categories, because this issue has bubbled up a lot during the discussion with our stakeholder group and the public. Ag worker dwellings are allowed in the ag and rural lands. That's not proposed to change. Those would still be the areas where ag worker dwellings are allowed as an additional unit within those land use categories. In the residential, rural, and residential suburban, there's the allowance of one additional caretaker dwelling, which is a permanent residence that is secondary or accessory to a primary use. And it allows on-site employee for residential use for security, monitoring, or other conditions. The proposed draft doesn't alter the allowance of the caretaker unit, so that would still exist. And based on all of that, the staff has recommended that the Planning Commission recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the Land Use Ordinance, Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance, and Coastal Framework for Planning Amendments, LRP 2017-2, with the findings in the staff report.
Very good. Any questions at this point?
Yeah, I have one. Being I'm in the ag business, I pay a little attention to this going on. It seems like the H-2A situation in the state is really perking up and doing a lot of changes. So are we dragging our feet by doing something now when there may be more changes within the next year in the H-2A? You can see how it's grown, and I think that's because they've lowered the price of doing it for farmers. And you anticipate any more activity statewide that could have to do this again soon?
That's always a possibility. Just with the similarly, with a couple months ago, the accessory dwelling unit ordinance, we're tracking legislation constantly. This ordinance should be up to date with the newest legislation, but we do anticipate it's going to continue, and we may be coming back with other ordinance amendments in the coming year, or maybe cleanups, just depending on what happens.
Good. You're aware of it anyway. It's happening fast.
Right.
Okay. Commissioner Brown?
Yes. I have a couple questions. Could you explain the no minimum lot size for single-family mobile home dwelling? I'm trying to visualize what is the physical scenario there.
So can you direct me to the page?
It's one on your table one, and I think you had it up on the video as well. Table one, proposed ordinance framework.
Oh, okay.
Retain
yes.
No minimum lot size. That can't mean what I think it does, I hope. I mean.
Right. So there's still a minimum lot size for in rural areas for single families or mobile home dwellings. If you're going to build a primary home, what this just basically says is that there is no minimum lot size for lots, just specifically for ag worker housing dwellings. So it's just for group quarters that you would have a minimum lot size.
Okay, so what I'm visualizing is mobile homes stacked together a quarter inch apart. Is that what you're talking about? Allowing or
no? So so the first item with all of this is that assume there's maybe a 5-acre piece of property.
Yeah.
And you have a primary home on it. There would be no minimum lot size to allow at least a farm support dwelling or an ag worker housing dwelling. But regardless of that, you need to meet the minimum density table that's in the ordinance. And so, for instance, for irrigated ag, you need a minimum of 20 acres to have one unit.
Okay.
So it's all dependent on the ag use on the property.
Okay. So it doesn't refer to the specific spacing of the dwelling units themselves from one another?
No, it does not.
Okay, Brian, I have several clarifications that I'd like to have, but maybe it'd be best to hear from the public first. I do have three
sure.
speakers.
Okay, I'll save my questions.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to address us on this now, in no particular order, Kaylee Ellis, if you'd come up and give us your comments. Try to keep them to 3 minutes if you can. Thank you. Either side, whatever you want. Good morning.
All right, good morning. My name is Kaylee Ellis, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Grower Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. Our members continue to experience a labor shortage, and farm worker housing is an important component in addressing this issue. We applaud the efforts of the county and staff bringing forward these improvements and would like to clarify a few points to address potential implementation issues down the road. We would like to see a higher density for dwellings, specifically for irrigated row crops and specialty crops. Conventional row crop and berry growers generally need a higher density than one employee per acre. We are seeking clarification on the limitations on use to ensure that employees of farm labor contractors are included in the definition of supported agriculture activities. We remain supportive of the previous public review draft's requirement of the inclusion of recreational facilities for more than 12 dwelling units. We are concerned with the rigorous requirements of providing recreational facilities for 12 or more people, as it may be cost prohibitive depending on the level of complexity. For example, like providing horseshoe pits compared to a soccer field for 12 people. We're concerned with disallowing agricultural worker housing on rural residential lands, especially in the South County in Napomo, as it relates to proximity to row crop production. We understand the constraints of the process and greatly appreciate the efforts for bringing forward these much-needed improvements. Thank you.
Thank you. Patricia Wilmore. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson Moultari, members of the Planning Commission. My name is Patricia Wilmore. I'm here on behalf of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance. I want to address two parts of this. One is the need, As I wrote in my email to you, at our last economic impact report, there were some 6,000 workers directly employed in the wine industry in this county. The most recent report from your ag department, which just came out Friday, has even higher numbers. If you look at ag in its entirety in this county, 10,000, over 10,000 jobs directly related. So there clearly is a need for adequate housing, such a need that one of our members even talked to our mayor in Paso Robles about the California Youth Authority buildings. Now, that's a stretch to try to convert that to housing. But I give that as an example for our members in the wine industry and their recognition that they need more housing opportunities for workers. We have many small family-owned vineyards among our members, and it's a great opportunity in this draft for them to come together, for several of the growers to get together and as a community provide housing for their workers. So these amendments will really help with opportunities for housing. I also like the change, if I may just say, words make a difference. And now instead of calling these farm support quarters, I think we're giving more respect to the workers by calling them agricultural worker housing. The next thing I want to address is the process. As Mr. Pedrotti has indicated, there were many stakeholder meetings, and I really liked the way these were conducted. He started with kind of a wide net of people who were interested in the issue. As time went on, and the discussion at that point was very open-ended. He didn't come with, well, here's what the county wants to do. He came with, what do you think we need? And we gave him a very, I think, extensive list. And that list kept getting narrowed down and narrowed down as the discussions went on. So I want to give a lot of kudos to Mr. Pedrotti and his staff for the way they conducted it. And it wasn't as though one meeting was enough. You know, we kept discussing it. We got more into the details of it as time went on. And I think what you have before you today is a very good result. Our members are a little different than the growers shippers, so my point of view comes to you mainly from our vineyard and winery members. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brent Burchett.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commission members. My name is Brent Burchett with the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. I've never spoken before this group today, but I've got to meet several of you all, and it's been my first year in the job and in this community, so just thank you for your service. I've worked in government before, and this was actually my first involvement with the county government when I moved here in February. It was the Ag Worker Housing Ordinance, and I had my preconceived notions about working with bureaucracy in California, and Brian Pedrotti was a great ambassador for you and for this county, and I just want to say thank you, and Lord knows some of our other ordinances we've worked on have not gone so smoothly and cooperatively, but this one is to reiterate the comments of Patricia and others. We just appreciate the work that was put into this and think that this is a huge step forward for our county. I know this board is very much familiar with agriculture and understands the special place it has in our community, but just to reiterate, we have Slo County Agriculture contributes $2.5 billion to Slo County. It supports 14,000 jobs, so our job is to advocate for all of our members. We know your job is to represent this entire community, not just any one particular industry, but I would argue that this is a unique time in Slo County agriculture. We are seeing a lot of farms having to close down. We're seeing farms having to move out. We're seeing pressures from federal government, from state government, and hopefully not from local government. And we are very happy. And in Kentucky, my dad said, never look a gift horse in the mouth. And this is certainly a good thing for the county. And just want to reiterate what was already said about the changes that would be extra helpful for our agriculture industry. But I had one member that I think you need to hear from today who couldn't physically be here. So I just want to read a comment from him. And this is from a 33-year-old wholesale nursery in Los Osos Valley, Elliot Paulson with Clearwater Color Nursery. And he writes, I'm not in agreement with the part of the proposal not allowing group dormitory type housing for nurseries. Unlike most ag operations, we have a much greater number of employees per acre. Over the last 10 years, we have had anywhere from 14 to 24 ag employees. Our nursery is on 10 acres. We are losing our very important employees due to the lack of housing in our area. If we want to see these organizations survive, if these businesses thrive, we need to support them in every way we can. And you have an opportunity today to remove this one small barrier that will really be a big deal to people in our community. And for that, we thank you for your attention, but humbly request that that change to allow group quarters for transplant nurseries be made. Thank you.
Thank you. I have another speaker slip. Stephen Leffer? Lefter? Good morning.
Morning. My name is Steve Leffler. I'm a vice president of Modular Lifestyles, and I'm representing the factory-built industry. So, Jay, you were talking about mobile homes. They're actually called manufactured homes. So my first note of my speech is that Fannie and Freddie have now commissioned all our factories to build land homes. They're actually going outside of site builders and forcing us to build a specific product for land homes. So they're going to mortgage those directly to the buyers. So this could be an opportunity with Brian, Erland, and Corey's great idea for affordable housing. This could be an answer using lesser expensive homes. Number two, factory homes, maybe not this less expense. Number two, City of San Luis Obispo approved tiny houses. I brought the first tiny house into the City of San Luis Obispo. We did a workshop for the zoning department and the mayor, and we built South Peak, which is just a few miles down the road. Let me tell you who's living there. It's not students as we planned 3 years ago. It's workforce housing, and that means workers from the wineries, tasting rooms mainly, hospitality business, and every other type of retail that would be associated with the operation, gas stations, grocery stores, and markets. So the last thing you should know is we have built a tiny house village in South Peak, but we also built one that could fit into this mold, and I'll share it with you. These are the tiny houses we put at South Peak, but we also built a community called YMCA in San Diego that used bunkhouse tiny houses, sleep 16. We did shared housing, shared bath and showers, because we didn't want each unit with the 16 people to have a bath. We also had shared dining. So that is on my website. I didn't bring a copy of that, but I think that would be something that would fit nicely. And if you had a consortium of wineries, i.e. farm workers, and you did a grouping, they could all live there amongst a community and then go out to the and service the different businesses. So thank you for letting me. Oh, one more thing. He was mentioning water. I brought it to their attention. I did an off-the-grid house and put it on the state capitol in front of Jerry Brown's office. We used an EcoJohn. If you're not familiar with incinerator toilets, that helps because if you're not familiar with it, it helps the environment because it doesn't use water. It's one cup of ash, family of four, once a month. So if you're looking for using manufactured homes, temporary sites that may address an issue today but may not be an issue 25 years old, you might want to consider factory-built housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody else who'd like to address the commission on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close the hearing, bring it back to the commission. And I just, if I might, I just want to understand, Brian, how this works. So I'm an agriculturalist, and I own property somewhere in the county. Based on the size of my holdings plus the nature of the agricultural activity that takes place there, I go to the table and it tells me how many units I'm allowed. And then anywhere in the county that's zoned ag or rural lands that I lease or own, I take that density from my operations and I can move it to this other piece of property. And then based on these these standards, I could build the housing there, and that's legal. Is that right?
Yes, it's legal. The there are some caveats in there in terms of the justification requirements. It has to be in direct support of the ag operation.
Sure.
All of that. So it used to be, I think the maybe what we're honing in on, it used to be a 5 mile radius.
It used to be on the site. Then it was a 5 mile radius, and now it's not.
No, so the existing ordinance would allow for single family home style mobile home dwellings. Those were and still remain, they have to remain on site.
Okay.
So it's the group quarters that are really the ones that can be located where you can justify them using ag that's outside of that. And again, it used to be 5 miles. Now there is no limit. And we, you know, we heard from the stakeholders that the 5 miles was sort of arbitrary, didn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of how regional housing needs are done, and especially with ag worker housing. So, but yes, single family style, where you get the up to 12, those have to be on site, and they need to be done or justified with ag use on that property.
Okay. So, in the first case, you could build group quarters off-site, is the thrust of it.
Correct.
My only question was, in that regard, well, I had a couple of questions, but my key one is, what if the operations on which that is based go out of operation? What happens to the housing that's been built?
So the it's a great question, because the housing, we put an agreement in place that's required to justify the housing based on that use. Technically, if the ag operations cease to exist, then that housing can no longer be used for ag operations for that agreement that you had. So it would need to be redone, find different ag operations that would qualify, or it would need to be removed.
Okay. So is there, it seems to me that there's a tremendous demand for this stuff, and once it's built, this notion that it might convert out to and not be allowed doesn't really make any sense to me, especially when there's no distance requirement, right? I mean, so why is there still, I understand that there needs to be some hook to limit it, but I'm not sure that it really makes sense that ownership is part of that hook. You know, the leasing of the land, the two parcels. Do you understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah. But what's that? The person leaving the farming operation, which you just mentioned, are you talking about just retiring from farming because he's old and somebody else will farm it, or are you talking about turning it into a subdivision? And rezoning it.
I'm saying, well, it's linked to ownership now.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's say I own the off-site parcel where I build the quarters, and I own or lease this farm. And now I don't want to do that anymore. Maybe I don't want to do either one, but I don't want to do that anymore. And so I sell it to somebody else. Now somebody owns the farm but doesn't necessarily own the site of the group quarters. And so the ownership has been split, and at least the way the ordinance is written, that would make the housing ineligible, wouldn't it? I'm just trying to see how we, you know, and to my mind, that doesn't really make any sense. But
So there's a couple of things, I think. One is that the ordinance itself, for just general ag operations, doesn't specifically say it's tied to ownership, but the section I think you're talking about is when it's sold. So that would be
when the farm is sold. Is that what you're?
Well, it's item number 7 in. Let's see, what is the actual? We'll look up the section for you here. So on page 9 of 26.
Nine.
Talks about sale of agricultural worker dwellings.
Oh, letter A.
And so the site of agricultural dwellings shall not be separated from contiguous property in the same ownership by sale or land division.
Yeah, I get that.
Unless a development plan has been prior approved, et cetera, et cetera. But the provisions that tie, if you back up a page to number C3, application content. So we're on page 5 of 26. So the application needs to include an explanation and documentation of the need for ag worker dwellings. The magnitude of the activities must be directly supported by the proposed ag worker dwellings, as well as the number of ag workers necessary to conduct the ag operations. And then there's a status of residence and then a density.
So you know, can you back up one more? Under B2B, page 4, it says agricultural worker dwellings in the form of single-family dwellings, including shall be located. Okay, so that only applies to single-family.
Correct.
Okay, so once the dormitories and mess halls are built, as long as they're available for ag workers, they're okay.
Correct.
Ownership doesn't make any difference.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. That was what was
Let me throw another question at you then, Brian. We're assuming in these discussions that I own a row crop farm or I own a vineyard or whatever, but a great percentage of these workers work through a labor contractor.
Right.
And they need to live somewhere, but they're working in a different place every day or every week or whatever. How does that fit into this situation here?
So that doesn't limit that. Strictly that the number of dwelling units you're allowed to have on the property is tied to the ag use either on your property for single family or for outside of that for group quarters. But that's how the tie is done.
Okay.
And so other than that,
they live there, they can go work it down the road to somebody else's place for whatever period of time.
But then what is the relevance of these tables, some of which were crossed out but were added, you know, the difference between, you know, grazing, nurseries, hog farms. What is the relevance there? Mm-hmm. In terms of numbers of allowable dwelling units, for instance, in the general agricultural employer, the workers go all around to, you know, they go from grapes to lettuce to whatever, and corollary to that is I change from grazing to grapes or lettuce, or, you know, so the use of the property changes, allowing me up more or less dwellings, I think.
For single family.
Single family, yeah.
Right.
And it seems just awkward to me. It is sort of related too closely to the ag op. Not that it shouldn't be, but I can see all kinds of gotchas coming out if you really follow this strictly.
Yes, and this is an existing table. Generally, you can kind of glean from it that the number of units allowed are tied to sort of the intensity of the ag crop. We looked at, we discussed with the Ag Commissioner's office, and there was not really any proposal to change any of those. They generally made sense. However, we did get some public comment regarding, specifically from the grower shippers, that there potentially should be more units allowed for irrigated row crop and specialty crops.
Exactly.
And that's open for discussion. We haven't seen in the office that the number of units per acre has been a ceiling yet for these types of units, but in the future that could be the case.
Because it seems to me that, and tell me if I'm wrong, in kind of the cleanest version of this, there would be no intensity table. Right. It would just say you can build farm worker housing on ag land and rural lands, and you get up to 12 single family dwellings on a site where there's agriculture going on.
Sure.
And if agriculture ceases, so what? As long as there's still use for ag workers, that's fine. And the dormitories, they can go anywhere in the ag or RL up to, you know, whatever it is, 36 units.
Yeah, that would be the cleanest implementation.
Wouldn't that be the cleanest way? Because it seems to me that we're building up this requirement that somehow they justify the numbers of units, but the place where that justification is taking place really has no bearing on where the housing is built. Right? It just, there's no legal, there's no ownership right. connection, there's no physical connection, there's no, it's just kind of this ephemeral linkage.
Yeah, I mean, you may have a hog farm someplace and you're authorized some number of units, but where the housing is might be 50 miles away.
So why wouldn't we treat it like, you know, very low income housing and that there be a deed restriction on it and say this is for farm worker housing only? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make any difference how you link it to operations in the county because the distance doesn't make any difference. Wouldn't that just be a cleaner way of dealing with this when we get rid of all those tables? Yeah. I don't know if there's a legal question raised by that or a philosophical one. I don't understand.
Yes, I would agree that it'd be cleaner. You know, we had discussions earlier, again, with the Ag Commissioner's office. They wanted to ensure that the units were tied to an agricultural use.
Could do that by a deed restriction.
Exactly. And there are jurisdictions that don't have, you know, when we did our research, there were jurisdictions that didn't have a density table at all. It was in the vein that you described where they were just allowed and you know, based it on the operations. So that certainly is an option. I'd also kick it to legal if they had a question about that. But from a planning standpoint, I think that's a possibility.
Well, I can say that I'm pleased to see an awful lot of things lined out as compared to what was there before, so, which I guess is a step in the right direction.
So where does that leave the – I'm a little confused. I mean, what you're saying is that you'd like to see it have a little more freedom – and then, but that's for the designations that we've discussed, but it still doesn't help the nursery people.
Well, that's a different question.
Yeah, that's a different question.
There's a couple of other ones, the rural.
And I have a couple other questions, too. But I think in principle, just big picture, this table kind of, you could imagine 5 years from now, I mean, this whole thing getting so screwed up because somebody's looking at that table and doing the math, you know, and it just doesn't work out. It might be true at some point in time, but it would drift immediately.
One other just consideration with all of that is that, with the State Employee Housing Act moving where a discretionary permit's not required until 12 or 36, then that would move to just allow 12 units or 36 beds on any property with a ministerial permit. I think during the discussions of all this, it was looked at that at least the maximum density table ties the number of units to a particular amount of irrigated ag, particularly on site. And so that was just a consideration, I think, that staff and the stakeholder group were looking at.
Well, are you saying that this would then properly cap those, not necessarily limit, but at least put a cap on those, that type of housing, which you may want to do? And if it was deed restricted, I suppose that was the only measure, then you'd have to have some way of really, qualifying the farm workers' occupations and tying the deeds to somebody that's in fact a farm worker, if you know what I'm saying. I don't know how you do that. But
sure. Yeah, in the absence of the density table, there's just any ag or rural land use category piece could immediately have a ministerial 12 or 36.
Right,
beds.
No. I don't think we want that. Yeah. I think we're talking about a way of getting to an actual true number of needed housing for ag workers. And whether or not we can do it through a deed restriction, if that may or may not work, or maybe you have to have this table, or maybe there's some other way flexibly to do it. I don't know. But
the table might have made more sense to me if the third column on group quarters wasn't there, because the second column would restrict single-family dwellings, the density of single-family dwellings, right, on these lots. What? But we're saying, why would we reduce the density of the group quarters when they're allowed otherwise? Or, right? I mean, I think Commissioner Brown's point is a good one about we really don't want to have any ag zone. You get 12 houses. Yeah. You know, as long as they're deed restricted for residential. Although, actually, if we thought about size limitations and other things, that might be a pretty good way to go. But short of thinking that through, column 2 limits the number of single-family dwellings on the lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Column 3, I'm not sure, does anything for us. It just limits the size of the dormitory. But why? I mean, especially when there's no, it doesn't have to be on the site. So it's just some vague, connection. Since it can be on any site.
It's a theoretical connection.
Yeah.
That may have a utility in putting a maximum number of these things. Mm-hmm. But other than that.
Yeah, if the demand is so high in the county, the maximum number would never get to that threshold.
You wouldn't think.
In the regional sense. So it seems to me, what's confusing to me and why I keep getting hung up is, what is column 3 doing?
Right, right.
So that's one bed per 50 hogs.
That's a potential change that the commission could look at,
okay.
Recommending to removing the density that's attributed to group quarters.
So, Mr. Chair, just to kind of clarify and restate what Brian mentioned a moment ago, we've definitely internally had this same discussion. And when we looked at those other jurisdictions that had ordinances that did not have density limitations for group quarters housing, they still require some sort of justification for the mm-hmm. amount of housing that they're asking for based on the amount of contracts they have or the amount of land they have leased in the agricultural use. We were concerned that because under state law, this type of housing has to be ministerial, that would put a lot of onus on our front counter staff to make a determination that they're submitting adequate documentation for that number of housing units, whereas the density table at least provides some fixed and certain standards that can be implemented easier.
But, Erlen, what if we were to say that the group quarters are deed restricted to be used only for agricultural workers? That would be even easier than messing around with the density tables, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's certainly an option that the commission can recommend. Yeah.
Well, you could do that with single-family homes.
You could do it for both. I mean, and then the column.
Yeah, the only
the concern about density for group quarters goes away.
Yeah. The only thing would really be being authentically employed workers getting into those houses, I guess. But
yeah.
What effect would this have on the present single-family residents that are being used for field worker or farm labor, ag work, labor, housing?
And we do have... just kind of on that subject, on page 6 of 26, under the status of residence, the last sentence on there is that an agreement between the property owner and the county limiting occupancy to ag workers and their spouses and children shall be executed and recorded prior to building permit issuance. So that will be in place in the proposed ordinance.
But what if you've got a house at the present time that you're using for ag workers? It's in a residential zone. What effect is this going to have on that house?
Sorry, say that one more time.
Okay. I have a single family home. It's a 4-bedroom home. This is in theory, okay? Mm-hmm. In that four-bedroom home, I have 16 farm workers living there. What effect is this ordinance going to have on that house?
There's no effect of this ordinance on that particular situation.
So why are we putting a limit on the number of people that can live in a house to one person per 20 acres or one person per 30 acres or one person for 320 acres? One bed.
Right. And keep in mind that's for group quarters, which is in a dorm style, a bunk style, whereas in the density restrictions for single family dwellings are per unit, which is per house.
Okay. So I'm just curious. Yeah. Trying to understand this.
Yeah, it is kind of confusing.
Your question, because your example is true. It's happening all the time.
I do not own one, but I...
No, hypothetically, you're right.
I know contractors...
How is that covered?
...that are growing, and they're importing workers, and they're housing them in houses. And then at the end of the season, those growers go back home.
But what we're doing is opening up a lot of land for additional building.
And I don't
specifically
think that's bad.
No. I'm just saying we're not talking about anything existing or whether or not I didn't quite understand, except you were comparing to a single-family home, existing single-family home, having 12 workers living in it. That's a whole different issue. What we're talking about here is allowing a lot of construction for additional farm worker housing. And how do you get your arms around that and not let it explode based on some other issue, somebody that might want to cheat the system or whatever, I don't know. So I think we do have to be careful, but, you know, is there another way to do it? I guess that's what we're...
Commissioner Ortiz, like?
Yeah, I think that with the input that we've received, as far as the density being the only thing that I keep hearing from the industry as being an issue, I mean, I feel like it's finally something that's moving forward where we're able to have landowners utilize their land in a way that benefits that operation. And I would just say, how did we come to the densities that we came to? That's my question. So, you know, the request for increased density or the fact that nurseries have been left out, I'm making the assumption that nurseries have been left out due to the classification of cannabis being nursery. And so that's why nurseries were left out of the density or the opportunity.
Well, so the density table that's in the ordinance has been in place for a number of years. So since, I believe, the 80s, maybe 90s. And so at that time, nurseries, when it was initially done, nurseries were not allowed for group quarters. And essentially the table is stayed the same since that time. Mm-hmm. Again, that wasn't proposed to change. You know, we've over the course of the number of years, the density table hasn't particularly been, as I said earlier, a limiting factor. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes the land use permit is a big limiting factor. Another one that was described during the stakeholder group was the water issue with the public water mm-hmm. systems, but also the fact that farmers don't always, as you described, they have land that they own, but they don't necessarily want to put the infrastructure in for homes when they're leasing the land. And then if that changes, then they're stuck with structures on their land. So there are a number of other factors out there. In terms of the density table, again, it hasn't been seen as a limiting factor. And that's why it has stayed the same. And again, there was some public comment, including nurseries being allowed with group quarters. Clearly, if the Planning Commission determines that the third column is not necessary, then that issue becomes moot in some way. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I guess.
Brian, on a related note to that, though, yeah. Another thing that occurred to me as I was reviewing this is a single-family dwelling. I could build a single-family dwelling with 8 bedrooms.
Yeah.
Right? And so if I'm allowed up to 12 with no building permit on my site, I could have a whole bunch of bedrooms, which, in effect, so the only limitation there would be, the, as far as I can see, is the water.
And the density table currently.
And the density table speaks to units, though, doesn't it? Not to beds.
Well, yes, correct. It
right,
speaks
for
to the number
family,
of units.
So I can make my single families as big as possible. So are we concerned about that? That a I could be allowed to do 2 single family houses and I could make them 8 bedrooms, and now I have 16 bedrooms on that site, as opposed to somebody who does mobile homes and puts 2 in, and maybe there's 2 or 3 bedrooms in that. I'm just wondering, we're concerned about numbers of people. Now the only limitation that I can see that affects the numbers of people, not the numbers of units of single family, is the kicking it into a public water system at this time. Is that, am I reading it right? Is that right?
Correct. So
okay.
The public water system kicks in with the number of people, not the number of units or anything like that.
Right.
So that issue would still be
that's what
still be there.
You could have a number of units, but you can't have more than 25 people without going to a public water system.
Right, and that is an option. So if you're willing to do the public water system, then
you can go bigger.
Yes, you could do it.
Well, on that thought, I mean, really, what you're talking about is the number of beds, isn't it? The number of beds, that's
for water,
for anything. I mean, you're concerned about the
I'm not sure I'm concerned about it. I just want to understand it.
And, yeah, well,
but yes,
really, the number of beds is kind of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Water and whether or not a single family home has 2 bedrooms or 8, it's still, I mean, the issue is the number of beds that you've got available. That's the critical issue, I would think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just wondering if, since it's single family is tied to units, does there need to be a person or bed capacity that's linked to it so that they don't, in effect, become, you know, dormitories or do we care? You know, up to,
yeah,
you know,
care?
Or do we care up to 36?
36
beds, do we really care?
Right. And there, you mentioned earlier, there is a building permit requirement for those.
Right. There's statute.
And again, those are limited by building the UBC's occupancy or the California Building Standards occupancy, which could be high. Right?
Which could be very
high.
But
there's a limit on the number of people that are allowed in a single family home based on bedrooms and all of that.
Yeah.
So there is a regulatory oversight, if
another
you will, prior
there.
To this
yeah.
going into effect.
Right.
We're just allowing for the ability for it to happen, but then for them to go forth, they'd still have to go to building and to get that permit and demonstrate all of the requirements, including ag worker, et cetera.
Right.
Right. And one thing just also to just keep in mind is that these are the existing rules in place today. So anybody could do... Mm-hmm. You know, up to 4 units with a ministerial permit and put that many people in. We haven't seen that happen again in ag and rural lands necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, with the changes here, that would pump that up to 12. But at the same time, you're also limited by the on-site agriculture and the density table.
Okay.
Again, just
Brian, what do you mean by define mutual water system? Is it for all the neighbors, anybody around the property, or is it just the 25 people, or 26 or 27?
According to the Environmental Health Department in the state, it's 25 people on a single system.
Okay.
So that could be a well. It could be a.
But you're not going to be, when you say public, you're not going to be made to bring people in from other areas to that system.
No, the public water system is just a designation by the state that,
right.
And there's additional requirements and operation requirements for that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And a couple other items that were brought up by the public. One was And you clarified that just if you're a farm, if you're a contract worker, you're still eligible for this.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. The question about recreation facilities, I'm sure your committee discussed that at length. Could you just tell us why you are recommending that they be required? And I notice that the language is pretty vague. You know, it says appropriate. You know, and I don't know who determines that. You know.
So it's and purposely that way. It was determined that depending on the resident mix, if these are families or whether or not there should be quality of life issues. That it was determined that there should be amenities, particularly with recreation. The item above the section that says amenities, which is on page 11 of 26, the one above that is just allowable accessory uses. So just recognizing that laundry services and food service could be also put in, and they're not deemed a restaurant or a laundromat or something like that. Those would be accessory to the facility.
Back to the recreational thing, I can certainly understand children play equipment, horseshoe pitching facilities. I think this was brought up earlier in the hearing. But, if you talk about soccer fields and that baseball fields, that's a considerable amount of valuable land. How's that going to – that just seems to be stretching the rec things a little far for me.
But it's vague.
Yeah, it's flexible in terms of the facilities. They would propose something. They would just need to demonstrate that they've provided some sort of recreation amenity.
Well, all of our towns have those facilities, and youngsters are very much involved with them, whether they're worker youngsters or other people that live there, when it comes to soccer fields and football fields and those big areas. So I think that basically those should be excluded from the list here.
Maybe something that was added to appropriate as to the residential use, does it include children, or is it just going to be adults?
Well, I mean, it could. Wouldn't that possibly fluctuate over time? I mean, you don't know from one year to another,
right,
the way that the temporary workers are, who's going to be there. So, I think it's flexible enough that, as long as they do something.
I think it's flexible enough to not mean anything, to tell you the truth.
So, in the concern with these uses, that sometimes they are very far out there,
right?
And so there isn't really the ability, and the employers providing housing and transportation as well. Potentially, there's not the availability to get to those facilities.
Well, let's get. Yeah, I think Commissioner Ortiz Legg brings up a really good point. But who determines appropriate then? How is it? What review goes into that to say that they've met this requirement for amenities? Would that be at the plot plan level, or?
Yes, that would be, at that point, it would be, depending on what the use permit was, it's going to be over 12 people, so depending on, that could be a single.
So this is only if there's more than 12 people?
Yeah. Correct.
And that's also true for the dining and laundry facilities?
No.
No.
That's allowable depending on whatever the use is,
okay,
or whatever
well,
the number of people are.
It's just allowable.
It says the following uses, if included specifically as part of a use permit, may be allowed as accessory. So,
right. They're not required. They're deemed to be allowable so that they can be incorporated into the project.
But what if there's no use permit? Are they not allowed in ministerial approvals?
First, they have a building permit.
That's ministerial. Now I was confused about that.
Yeah, that
it's
could
on
be,
page 10 under C.
That could be a section we could change, but it is currently under the current wording. It would be part of a use permit.
It seems that particular sentence probably needs a little bit of clarification, because I read it as that you need a discretionary permit before these would be considered accessory.
Well, we do have a zone, even for the number of ag dwellings on page 5 of 26,
okay,
a zoning review, which is a ministerial, is a use permit.
So it could be tied to that.
I don't think zoning review would count as isn't that ministerial?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think you can use that. Yeah, because then you've kicked it up to discretionary. It doesn't, but just a technical thing, but I don't think legally that works. And I think council would agree with that.
I have another comment.
It's 10:30.
Okay.
Why don't we take a 15-minute break? We'll be back at 10:45, and we'll try to conclude this. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to call the meeting back to order, please, and we'll continue our discussion. Do you have a...
No, I just took...
Oh. So, I'm sorry to backtrack a second, but could you go to page 4, number 2...
4 of 26.
4 of 26, item B... To B.
B to B.
And it says, this is the part that I got confused. I was comfortable, and then I thought about it again. I'm still confused. Agriculture working dwellings in the form of single-family dwellings, including mobile homes, shall be located in parcels owned or leased by the owner of supported agricultural activities. So it seems to me that it's conceivable that I could own more than one parcel or lease multiple parcels and then agglomerate, if you like, the numbers of units and move them based on the density table and move them to one of my leaseholds. But it doesn't have to be on that particular lease or ownership if I have multiple leases and multiple ownerships. That's where I get a little uncomfortable about that. And then, because I think that over time, people might sell one or more of their ownerships, and then it's going to change the allowable density, or it could violate B for one. I'm not sure a good reason if they're deed restricted. Maybe we don't. That's what I was kind of getting at. I wonder if we really care about that.
Okay, so I think the intention of this was to maintain that the ag dwellings shall be located on the parcels owned or leased, so that you can't really conglomerate them onto one parcel and then have property that's all over the county, all around, right?
Yeah. Right. It doesn't say that.
So we could clarify so
that one needs to be clarified. If the intent was otherwise, and that, okay.
And while we're looking at it, I would think we probably, and this gentleman is right, who spoke earlier, start changing our mobile homes to manufactured homes, probably a better way to go in an ordinance.
And I have a comment, a little not along the lines that we've been talking about, but something that was brought up by the Creston Advisory Board on private roads, and staff did comment on those, but I'm not sure that they got the intent of the Creston Advisory Board. Private roads, you know, and I happen to have one that with a group of parcel holders in our area. And the way those are maintained is that everybody proportionally puts in money into the kitty to maintain that road. And I think what Creston Advisory Board is concerned about is you've got a road, a private road, and apparently there are a lot of them in that area, and then you put one of these facilities on a parcel down that road, and all of a sudden it becomes a usage of maybe, you know, 4 or 5 trips a day to, I don't know, 30 or 40 trips a day. So I would like to see some provision that any new agriculture housing accessible through a private road must enter into some kind of, you know, the existing cost-sharing maintenance agreement with the people that are responsible for that road, so that, you know, you're not swamping a private road with people that aren't contributing it to the maintenance. Now, that may not be the farm workers. That probably would be paid for by the landowner, but some mechanism so that you don't swamp the maintenance of that private road. And I can see it in our area. I can see it happening. And those private roads are usually just marginally, you know, okay. I mean, there's just enough to get through, and then you up it by 3, and boom, there are mud and potholes.
Makes sense.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And the question, though, what they suggested is that unless there's unanimity among the adjacent shared easement holders,
mm-hmm.
then you wouldn't be allowed to do that. I think that's not the solution that we'd want.
No, I would think that it would just be, you know, a condition that if you put in this, whatever it is, mm-hmm. dormitories or whatever, that if you up the usage, that it would be, you know, would be disproportionate to the maintenance of the road that landowner, the one that is holding all these.
That makes perfect sense, but I'm going to ask council. Wouldn't that get kind of tricky because those are usually privately held easements?
Yes, Van Dorth County Council. I think that would be something I would recommend, that we let the people that are live on that private road work out themselves. I'm uncomfortable with adding any sort of restrictions, any additional layers to this, which is the purpose is supposed to be just a simple ministerial permit. So I would my recommendation would be to let the private road owners work that out themselves.
You need them to do it themselves, but why would they do it? I mean, if somebody puts in 36 beds, mm-hmm. they just put it there and say, you know, I'm doing this and I'm not paying for the roads.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably what would happen.
Give us some guidance.
Yeah, there probably should be a solution different from doing nothing and, you know, letting them work it out themselves. And what was suggested, which was bring it up to county standards and make everybody, you know, give permission.
Well, I think you could just say, you know, that the landowner must provide equity or not equity, but, you know, responsibility for maintaining that road in some kind of system of proportionality. I don't know you could define it exactly, but a caveat on there so that
experts.
John Sullivan, County Council. I'm going to echo what Ben said. I mean, in terms of like trying to figure out what equity is. I've done an integral amount of private easements themselves,
yeah.
And determining what that specifically is. Do you base it on number of you know residential units, based on acreage, based on you know a dynamic agricultural use itself? It's incredibly tricky, and then to insert the you know our staff into that process that's supposed to be ministerial would be incredibly difficult to administer ministerially.
Yeah, I understand.
The homeowners themselves could say no to that use based on the language of their easement, or if it becomes a nuisance, there's that. And then also considering if the agricultural operation is on that property, you're going to have employees going to and from the...
Yeah, no, I'm not so much that. I'm just talking about an isolated development of ag worker housing, wherever it is, on the end of the dirt road, ranch road.
Based on your experience, mine is pretty limited, but if the, let's say there's a property owners association and they share a road and there's a road maintenance agreement, mm-hmm. which actually I do know something about that, and there are restrictions that this is supposedly for single family dwellings or whatever, mm-hmm. and then this stuff is allowed, with the deed restrictions that limit the use, they could override any...
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they're two separate instruments.
Right.
There's,
okay.
you know, land use permitting authority, and then there's a contractual relationship that those owners have established amongst themselves.
Yeah. Right.
So there is a remedy.
So yeah. I think
and we see that often with water. If it's a shared well, the shared well can't be used for commercial purposes, and so...
David Green with Public Works. Yes. If I could just add one thing to the discussion, the only instances where we require and condition, as far as Public Works, we can condition that there be a road maintenance, a private road maintenance agreement that's separately, that's recorded separately, for a discretionary permit, is where there's general public traffic coming out onto the property site. This wouldn't meet that criteria. Even if it was a discretionary permit.
Even though it would up the use of the road by a factor of 4 or 5 or...
Sorry,
even though it would up the use of the road by a factor of 4 or 5, perhaps.
Correct, yeah. You know, in lieu of a road maintenance agreement, then it's a civil issue. You know, the default then, outside of any other agreement, would be a proportionate share of bearing those maintenance costs proportionate to the properties that use the road.
Okay.
Yes, Commissioner Ortiz-Lake.
Yeah, I think that having the guidance from the staff and all, I think that we're clear on that now.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as good idea as I thought. But it's good that you thought about them, because you know that what it can happen, you know. But that is there is remedy for them, so that's what's important.
My other, I think... There was a couple other questions that the public brought up, which I'm going to remind us to at least comment on. But my last big concern, I think, is that some areas might be inappropriate for these kinds of housing activities. And so in the Title 23 section, which is the coastal zone one, under A, it says there's a limitation that it wouldn't be on prime soils. I don't think we care about that. I mean, we care, but I don't think that would be something that we'd. And then there's slopes and flood. And I think, as we've talked about before in other housing issues, very high fire risk areas. And could there be, I wouldn't want to prohibit them necessarily, but could we require some kind of discretionary approval for those that are deemed in these high-risk areas, either because of topography, fire, or flood? And I guess council will have to tell us if we're preempted.
Yeah, Ben Dorth, County Council. And I think up to the extent that we're approving 12 single-family residences, 36 beds, there's no discretion allowed, and we're preempted by state law from imposing any sort of restrictions. And the idea is that... 12 single-family residences, 36 beds, is the same as any sort of other agricultural use, and we need to allow it.
And why are we putting the prohibition in the coastal zone?
That's a good question.
Well, do we have it at prohibition in the coastal zone?
I just read it.
So that's it. That's an existing, and it's not necessarily, we'll just clarify, it's not necessarily a prohibition. What it is a, it's a section that states that if your property is completely covered with prime ag, flood hazard, or slopes, that then you can locate agriculture housing in those areas. Otherwise, you need to find an area that's not in those three areas.
Why couldn't we, I guess this is a legal question as much as a, but it's a plan, could we, I guess high fire risk areas would be the entire site. But wouldn't we want at least two and three, you know, steep slopes and flood hazard areas to be excluded from where these can be sited? That's not prohibiting it on the property. It's just saying when you do the site plan, you can't put it on 20% slopes or in the flood hazard combining areas. Again, Ben, do you have some?
Ben North County Council. I imagine that that is something that would be reviewed during the building permit stage. Is that maybe...
Yeah,
staff can jump in on that.
Yeah, it would be still ministerial, but you would have these overlays, and if you would have to site your buildings outside of these restricted areas. Mm-hmm. Is that was the intent, right, in the coastal zone?
That was the that was the intent in the coastal zone. That's an existing provision that's there. We didn't remove it with the proposed ordinance.
Okay, so if I were not in the coastal zone, and I came in and I wanted to put some of this, I wanted to grade on a 20% slope to put in a new single family house for farm workers, or I wouldn't be allowed to do that without some discretionary approval. Is that right today? Or would there be a limitation on that? I mean, is there a slope hazard site restriction extant outside the coastal zone?
Yes, there's a limit on construction, I believe, above 30%.
30. Okay.
And for in terms of flood hazard, construction can occur in the flood hazard as long as
you meet your firm
elevate, right?
Elevation.
And then prime ag, you can build in prime ag.
All right. What about a high risk fire area? One road in, one road out. You know, dead end road.
You're saying we're preempted from that.
There's no limitation right now on constructing additional units on parcels that are existing that relate to very high fire or high fire severity areas. Those restrictions are in place with the subdivision requirements. Now that may change with the ADU. Recommendation from the Planning Commission, which did recommend to prohibit ADUs in very high fire severity areas.
I would like to add as well that farm worker housing or agricultural worker housing would still require a construction permit, and Titles 22 and 23 require, as part of the construction permit, submittal a fire safety plan. And obviously, if a project's located in a very high fire hazard severity zone, they're going to be subject to more strict requirements by CAL FIRE.
Okay. That's good. We don't need to babysit any further, do we? I mean, really, the whole idea here is that don't we want to give the opportunity to the agriculture community to be able to utilize the lands that are not, you know, that surround and everything? And I mean, when you look at ag lands in the first place, I mean, one thing is that high fire districts may change. We may be out of those, I mean, at one point. So to put any kind of, I don't know. It's kind of just...
I don't know. It's my personal feeling is that good planning would take into account realistic hazards, whether it's flood, topography, fire, earthquake. That's basic planning 101, and we are planners. Now, if we're preempted from doing that, that's one thing. You know, then, okay, we're preempted, you know. And... But if we're not, I think it's legitimate for us to ask where we would put this, because we have a big county. It's bigger than the state of Delaware. And there's a lot of room for these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And we still should be thinking about where is the most appropriate place for this, encouraging it. I mean, we're actually making it more flexible than the staff recommended, but I don't think, you know, we should be, we should just dismiss these kinds of hazards.
I'm thinking in my area of a place that has burned, was a hellhole, I mean, a terrible burn a year and a half ago.
Yes.
And people that lived there were trapped, and there was no farm workers. It was just the, you know, half a dozen parcel holders, but they couldn't get out.
And especially when we're saying this is going to be families with kids.
Yeah.
Well,
it would be awful.
Not everybody's going to have a car to get out. I'm not saying that we should. I'm just saying that, to me, this is a concern.
Uh-huh. I appreciate that. I guess I mean, I think that with the building permit and all of the things that are required under that, that there's still a great deal of things that they have to meet. And it would seem that one that was going to invest in a place would be considering of the liabilities.
I wish that were true.
Maybe not. I mean, it's a pretty significant undertaking to take on what we're allowing to happen.
Sure.
So, I mean, giving the idea that to take that undertaking and invest in housing for 36 individuals and put it in a place that has some of these risks, I don't know.
It doesn't make sense to you or me, but I've certainly seen stuff like that done.
Okay.
But back to council. Are we preempted from excluding? So a lot that's in a high fire risk area, we can't just say that's not allowed.
That would be my read.
Okay. So it's moot.
You can direct staff. We can look into that a little bit more, but that would be my take at this point with the that we are preempted from.
Have you looked at the high fire hazard area outlined in this county?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, there was a couple other things that.
The nursery.
Yeah. So, if we were to eliminate column 3. Then the nursery question becomes moot, too. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then the concern about that the density limitations were too strict for certain kinds of agricultural crops would go away, at least in terms of group quarters, too. Is that's true, too?
Yes, in terms of group quarters.
Yeah. And single family, it seems it's kind of irrelevant anyway because you can put as many bedrooms in your single family as you want. So. That concerns, to my mind, goes away too. I did have. There was a concern that rural lands should be allowed, and I had a more generic question about that. And I read the staff report about how you discussed that, and the committee kind of leaned that way at first, and then backed off, and so on. I wonder.
We're talking about residential rural?
Residential rural, the RR zones. That was brought up, is that we should allow these in that zone as well. And I wouldn't insist on it, but would there be a way to do that maybe subject to a CUP in certain areas that would require a big, a discretionary hearing in front of us and then could be appealed to the board? Or do we just not want to go there? Is that just complicating this too much? And because it seemed if we want to put it in RL and ag, maybe we want to be a little bit more flexible for appropriately sized places if there is a discretionary use permit. Or is that just opening up a can of worms that's going to bog this thing down forever?
I do think that that's a possibility. You could add that in as a possibility. Again, we, you know, our determination was that the allowance of the caretaker unit was something that provides some sort of employee housing on site.
I personally won't open that can of worms then. Okay. All right. Any other comments? Okay. Do you want to summarize or do you want me to try? Go ahead.
I just a couple clarifications on the table. It sounds like the direction was to eliminate the third column only. Is that correct? Okay.
Well, I'm not sure that there's a consensus on that. Right. I guess maybe we should have a straw vote.
Could you give us the page number, please?
9 of 26.
There's 9 of 26?
I think.
But yes, a summary would also help as well.
Gotcha. Okay.
So this is the maximum number of beds in group quarters, and it seems that this is not entirely useful given the other provisions of this. So,
but didn't we also talk about possibly eliminating the whole table and going to another basis for limiting it to ag workers on a on the basis of deed restriction?
Well, let's do one thing at a time.
Okay.
Do you want us to maybe read off the list that we have?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And the page number, if you would, please. Okay.
So one of the items, the first item is to change the verbiage for mobile home to manufactured homes.
Okay.
Second item is to only allow ag workers housing in the form of single family dwellings on lands with the ag operation that's being directly supported.
I don't think we said that. Yeah, I don't remember that one. Sorry.
That's not the SFD on your farm. You can't use it off-site.
Oh, no, it's already.
See, there's another one that if you, was mentioned earlier, and we've heard it before, you know, utilizing a facility such as the Boys School in Paso Robles, but there, or any other facility, it may not be on ag land. But if the condition of buying it for the conditional use permit to put something could be taken care of, you know, it could be designated for ag use as ag, it seems to me you wouldn't have to have a crop on it if there was a piece of property for sale near your farm that wasn't being farmed.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chair, I think to clarify Corey's comment, I think the intent there was to just clarify that single-family dwelling, ag support housing is only allowed on site.
This is the B2B
right.
B
right. On
okay.
site.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Right. Okay. I got it now.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
So to be clear, we're keeping that change.
Yes, please.
Okay. Third item is to on the allowable accessory use section to change it so that it allows for ministerial review.
And put what, if you could tell us a section and or page, that would help us.
Okay.
It's page 22 of 26, allowable accessory uses.
Page 10 of 26. That's coastal also. Yeah.
So where are you?
The Inden version is page 10 of 26.
Okay.
So that is to change the verbiage that indicates that you need to include this as part of the use permit.
All right. So this is just a cleanup, clarify.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And the fourth item is to direct staff to look into whether or not we can have a limitation on areas with high fire hazard to limit ag worker housing.
Okay. Very high.
Very high fire hazard.
Right. Just to see whether that's moot and it's preempted. I guess we're hearing from council that it is, but maybe just confirm that.
Okay. And then the fifth item is to eliminate column 3, which is the group quarters column of the density table.
Okay. So before we go on to anything else, how about a straw vote to direct staff to address those five items? Everybody in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody? Okay. So we've got consensus that those five items do need a little bit of work. Now, Commissioner Brown, you had another idea?
Well, we had discussed a method by which we might use deed restrictions as the, I guess you'd put it as a cap on this program rather than tying it to a maximum density table.
Well, I think, is an agreement required for these things? Could you point us to that section, please?
Thanks. So page 6 of 26, under status of residence at the top.
What's the page?
It's 6 of 26.
Okay, I didn't hear that. Thank you.
And then the last sentence identifies that an agreement is required.
Right, right. It is in there, but given that it's in there, why do we have the tables? I think that was, what's the functionality of the tables that lay out the number of dwelling units or beds for a specific kind of ag operation? I mean, we had talked about, I thought, just including the whole thing and under an umbrella of legitimate ag workers.
Well, I think for column 3.
Column 3 does that?
Column 3, we get rid of that, and agreements, make sure that these are dorms or whatever for ag workers.
Okay.
Column 2 actually limits the numbers of units based on the intensity of certain crops. And back to the thing that you guys are going to clarify, it is on a site that is contiguous with those operations, right? And but it doesn't limit the number of bedrooms or the numbers of people. It just limits the numbers of units. I think that's the question that you're
okay, raising. Okay, so number 2 defines it as on-site.
Mm-hmm. For single-family houses.
For single-family houses, and I guess that's okay. I'm not sure why you have to have that either, but okay, I won't.
So I understand where you've got that. I agree with Commissioner Brown. I'm not 100% convinced that that is necessary, but because, again, we still could have and you can't separate the ownership. Okay, I'm okay with that for now, but... Okay. Anybody else have anything else? Council, do you have any advice or concerns that where we're at?
Not at this point.
Okay. So if we were to continue this to our next meeting, could you guys draft up this amended language and bring it back?
Chairman Moltari, so there was one more thing that I think that was not on that list, wasn't that the recreational
right.
amenities?
Right.
And I don't know if you wanted to suggest.
I think we...
If address
we,
that.
We address that as vaguely appropriate, and which personally I think is meaningless, but that's okay.
So there's so one option is to have this be the recommendation that goes forward to the board in terms of the items that we've listed, and we can, for instance, remove do all the 5 items. And then have that be the Planning Commission recommendation to the board.
Mm-hmm. Or you could bring it back.
And we could look at
it. And we could look at it, which I'd like to look at it again. Frankly, if there's no downside to that, I'd like to look at it.
Okay, well, let's go down the line. So Commissioner Brown would like to see a revision. Commissioner Campbell?
I'd like to see it in writing, too, also.
Commissioner Harrison?
I'd like to pass it and get it out of our way.
I feel like we've made our statements clear about what it is that we need, and I think it's time is of essence that we need to move this forward. I mean, people need housing.
I can live with that, too.
Yeah, we need farm labor housing. I think everybody agrees with agricultural labor housing, and we've discussed it. There are 5 items that we would like to see changed that you have, and I think that we should pass this and move it on to the board.
Okay. I think my personal feeling is we've been clear enough that I'm comfortable with you guys moving this on with the clarity, with the items that we've enumerated. So I think we have at least a majority.
I'll clarify what my comment was. I thought you perhaps wanted to see it in writing, and we didn't want to stay around today till they do it.
That's
continuous.
No.
So I'm for solving the problem today also.
I
was just thinking of the rules of taking a break while they change the language situation.
We're not going to do that. okay. So If that's the at least the majority opinion, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion that we recommend the Board of Supervisors approve of the land use ordinance, coastal zone land use ordinance, and coastal framework for planning amendment LRP 20170002 based on the findings listed in the attachment one and the changes that we've discussed today.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion or question? Okay. Could you call the roll, please, Ramon?
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Chairman Moultari?
Yes. Okay. Thanks, staff. Good job. Good luck. And keep us posted on, you know, like the ADU thing. I think we'd like to know when the board hears it and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great.
Compliments to you, too, for getting this going and all the good things we heard from the community.
Yeah, that was...
Okay.
Yeah.
So do we have a motion then to enter testimony and correspondence into the record?
Yes.
I so move.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 And adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, all in favor.
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. See you in December.
I was going to make a motion to say how important immigrants are, but I guess I'll leave that up.